Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 07-5258. Amen Del Vaca, appellate, Sara Del Vaca, as next friend of Amen Del Vaca versus George W. Bush et al. Ms. Rinas for the appellate, Ms. Hancock for the appellate.
Good morning, Your Honors. Mr. Belbacha is a man who alleges that he will face possible torture or death either at the hands of the Algerian government or at the hands of the Al-Qaeda group there, each of whom associates him with the other. The question in this case is whether the district court has jurisdiction even to consider Mr. Belbacha's prayer for preliminary injunctive relief. The government's main contention, and there's some indication from the court's prior minute orders in this case, is that the court is bound by its decision of February 20th in Boumediene, and on that authority believes that jurisdiction is lacking to consider Mr. Belbacha's prayer for preliminary relief. We believe that this view is erroneous, and that the pendency of Boumediene's case in the Supreme Court permits the district court to grant the preliminary relief if it should find that the four-part test for preliminary relief is satisfied.
Is it the grant of cert alone that cast doubt on Boumediene?
Under these circumstances, yes, Your Honor. Normally, a grant of cert requires the vote of four justices, but the decision...
So the rule is when it's a vote of five that we no longer consider the precedent binding on us?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, I think that it casts serious doubt on the viability of this decision. But more to the point, Your Honor...
How are we to know that? That's an awfully subjective intent. Are we supposed to also listen to the transcripts of oral argument and divine from that which direction they're headed in?
We don't rely entirely on that, Your Honor. This court recalled the mandate in Boumediene and Al-Oda, recalled the mandate in Kiemba, and stayed the appeals in the 30-day notice cases pending the disposition of Boumediene. I think it's fair to say...
But in this case, we did something different, right? Mm-hmm. In this case, we denied the motion for stay pending appeal, right?
That's correct, Your Honor, but that was an emergency stay request. The court was certainly entitled to conclude that it warranted the fuller briefing and examination that a merits appeal warrants, and the court, in fact, granted expedited consideration of this appeal and is hearing argument
on the appeal. Let's assume that there is jurisdiction, or at least that it's colorable in light of the Supreme Court's grant of certiorari in Boumediene. But what is the law that you're invoking to entitle your client to an injunction? Is it the Constitution? And if so, what provision of the Constitution? And if it's a statute, would you give me the citation?
Your Honor, our argument on the merits is that the habeas statute, well, the common law habeas under the Constitution itself would permit the court, in the facts of these cases, to enjoin the transfer of Mr. Belbacha, at least to preserve its, then 1651 would entitle the court to preserve its jurisdiction at least until the Supreme Court decides the Boumediene case, and the decision in that case could
But all that does, if we assume, what I'm suggesting is that you have to, in order to prevail, you have to show irreparable harm, and you certainly have made a case out for that, but you also have to show a probability of success on the merits. And I don't find anything in your brief that addresses the probability of success on the merits. You talk about the jurisdiction, and you have to get over that hurdle, and I agree with you that the Supreme Court's grant of certiorari at least is relevant to that. But where is the probability of success on the merits?
Well, Your Honor, Judge Randolph, with respect, I don't think that the test in this circuit is probability of success on the merits. I think that there is a sliding scale where the court balances the equities, and the sharper and more compelling.
It's been the test in this circuit for 50 years.
I think that under WMACT or under WMATC, it's been recognized, and since it's been recognized, that it's a sliding scale and that the factors have to be weighed in proportion to each other, and that the sharper the showing of irreparable injury, all a petitioner has to do is show that he's raised a serious
What's the serious question on the merits that you've raised? I don't see any law.
The serious question is whether the United States would violate a CAT if it sent Mr. Balbacha back, the Convention Against Torture. There's a serious question about whether, under the standard of the asylum laws, the United States would violate Mr. Balbacha's right by sending him back to the back to the fate he'd meet in Algeria.
Because none of that's argued in your brief.
We have mentioned these provisions specifically as a matter of international law, which we would like to litigate and have decided before the district court. We didn't see the need to argue them in this brief because the issue here is one of jurisdiction. There's no per se rule against a court barring the transfer of an individual back to a country where either he faces a well-founded fear of persecution or he has satisfied his burden of showing that it is more likely than not that he would be tortured. All we ask for is the opportunity to litigate those issues in the district court and to make a full factual record and to demonstrate that the balance of equities favor preliminary relief. We haven't had that chance because the court cut off the inquiry on the basis of jurisdiction, and this court previously denied emergency relief on the basis of jurisdiction while exercising jurisdiction or maintaining jurisdiction in several other cases.
What argument have you the government says that your arguments before us now are exactly the same as the arguments you made that were rejected in the when you sought an emergency stay, and that rejected by us and then rejected by the Supreme Court, not just the Chief Justice, but he referred your motion to the full court, and the full court denied it. What is the difference between what you're raising now and what you raised before us in the Supreme Court that was rejected?
Well, Your Honor, if I may begin with the fact that the government has previously argued the separation of powers issues in connection with its appeals from the 30-day notice orders, that yet this court has stayed the government's appeals from those 30-day orders. So apparently the court does not accept the government's arguments with respect to separation of powers. Second, Your Honor, we believe that the court is capable of preserving the status quo pending the Supreme Court's disposition of Boumediene. We don't believe that the court would deny.
Maybe I didn't make myself clear. You know the law of the case doctrine?
Yes, Your Honor, of course.
Okay. And so what I'm trying to figure out is what argument you have made before us that was different from the arguments already rejected by us, by a panel of this court, and by the full Supreme Court when you went up on an emergency motion for injunction.
Your Honor, we don't believe that those should be regarded as final dispositions on the merits. They're denials of preliminary
My question is, what arguments are you making before us that are different from the arguments that you made in the last round of proceedings?
The legal arguments, the arguments for jurisdiction, Your Honor, I will say are not different.
Okay.
But we don't believe that the court's earlier denial of emergency relief based on Boumediene forecloses it from granting a relief to preserve the status quo pending Boumediene. And we believe that the court has done so. We certainly didn't brief the issue of equal protection on the earlier applications. Can't be regarded as law of the case, Your Honor.
The Supreme Court's action on your earlier motion was before the grant on reconsideration?
No, sir. I believe that it was afterward. But again, Your Honor, that the denial of an application for an emergency relief is not precedent. It's not a decision on the merits. The court has many institutional reasons for deciding not to grant preliminary relief, and there was no opinion.
Okay.
If there are no further questions, Your Honors, I will reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Good morning. May it please the court. Catherine Hancock on behalf of Appellees. Section 7A of the MCA has two independent withdrawals of jurisdiction, both of which apply here. As we were just discussing, the first part of Section 7A removes federal jurisdiction over actions, habeas actions filed by aliens detained as enemy combatants.
Let me jump in and counsel and ask you, there have been a number of special panel decisions by this court in which we in fact have, on transfer issues, in which we have deferred consideration and held in abeyance pending the outcome of Boumediene. Were those wrongly decided? How do we square that with what you're asking us to do now?
Well, the court, I believe, in those cases stayed consideration but did not find that there was jurisdiction to issue a preliminary injunction barring transfer. And this court has discretion to stay its cases administratively, but
if we don't have jurisdiction, do we have discretion to hold something in abeyance if there's no jurisdiction?
No, I don't think if there's no jurisdiction, then to hold it in abeyance, I don't think there would be authority to do that. But administrative stays, this court, and
were those wrongly decided?
I think it depends on whether those were administrative stays or holding in abeyance, and it's not clear from those decisions, I think, which they were. Again, in this case,
if there's a colorable claim to jurisdiction, a colorable claim that we have jurisdiction, then do you agree that we can hold the, freeze the situation while we determine whether we have jurisdiction?
Yes, this court, Your Honor, clearly has jurisdiction to determine its own jurisdiction, and so if it...
And to preserve the status quo while we do so.
That's correct, Your Honor, but in this case, I think the situation is entirely different. As this court recognized in denying the preliminary injunction pending appeal, Boumediene is the law of the case that is binding on this circuit, and so that there is no habeas...
That doesn't mean there might not be a colorable argument in light of the grant of cert that we do have jurisdiction.
But if there's only a colorable claim and there's not jurisdiction itself, then there's no jurisdiction to exercise that jurisdiction to issue a preliminary injunction.
Well, it wouldn't be colorable if it were foreclosed by circuit law, but that's now been drawn into question.
Well, I think this court has recognized that Boumediene is law of the circuit and is binding until this court either en banc reverses that decision.
That's quite right. It's binding, but there is, we don't have to say it's wrong if all the petitioners need here is a colorable argument.
But I don't think that's enough here to get them an injunction, a preliminary injunction barring
transfer. What about
transfer?
Probability of success? Forget about the merits. It's just the probability of success that the jurisdictional argument will or decision will go in their favor.
I don't think there's any probability of success Your Honor.
Let me give you a statistic. Do you know that out of all the cases the Supreme Court grants certiorari in, that they reverse 65% of the time? Now, is 65% a probability of success?
Well, and let me answer your question this way, Your Honor. I think even in this case, if the Supreme Court were to reverse Boumediene, that wouldn't give this court jurisdiction to grant the relief petitioner seeks here.
All I'm asking is the One of the conditions for granting a preliminary injunction by the appellate court is probability of success, irreparable harm, probability of success, where the public interest lies and all that. And I just want to focus on the probability of success. Isn't the fact that the Supreme Court has granted certiorari enough to demonstrate probability of success?
I don't think by itself it is, because, again, we can't know when the Supreme Court grants certiorari what exactly that means. It means they're going to review the case. We know
that when they do that, they reverse 65% of the time.
I still don't think that's enough on a statistical statistical happenstance that 65% of the time is reversal. That's enough to establish probability of success, especially in this case where there's an independent jurisdictional barrier, even if the Supreme Court were to reverse in the case.
I thought a stronger argument would be that the Hamley case is circuit precedent for the proposition that even after the grant of certiorari in Boumediene, that we still will not give preliminary relief because we lack jurisdiction. We said that in that order, and at least since January of 2000, orders of this court are considered precedential, right?
Yes,
so the order said that, and it's after the grant of cert in Boumediene, so that may be the stronger argument.
Well, we did cite Hamlili in our brief, Your Honor, and we agree that Hamlili also suggests that this court lacks jurisdiction.
It didn't suggest it. It stated it. It said it's in the appendix, isn't it?
You're correct, Your Honor, and it does. It cites the MCA.
Court lacks jurisdiction to grant requested relief, see Section 7 of the Military Commissions Act.
And I agree completely, Your Honor, that Section 7A, there's two parts of it, and each independently withdraw jurisdiction and prevent this court from having the authority to issue an injunction barring transfer. If the court has no further questions.
I may have one. Give me a moment.
All right. I just wanted to address one point that I guess was addressed in the earlier orders about where this court has stayed, or one of the cases opposing counsel cited was the Al Ginko case. And in that situation, again, I think it was different in that there was the court did not, when it sent the case, this court denied our motion to dismiss the habeas cases outright, but just allowed that dismissal of the habeas cases to be decided by the district court in that situation. And again, here we're not asking for the habeas case to be dismissed, but that just the motion to bar transfer.
I want to ask you about one proposition that seemed to me to be somewhat questionable in your brief. It is the proposition that the request for an injunction to prevent a transfer doesn't really sound in habeas corpus. Isn't habeas corpus traditionally used to prevent transfers of an individual out of the jurisdiction of the court?
It's generally used to the relief one gets in habeas is release from custody. That's what one gets to challenge in a habeas action. And what happens after that release is not something that has traditionally been encompassed in habeas. Once one is released from custody, as the detainee would be here in a transfer scenario, when he's transferred to the custody of a foreign government for their independent decision whether to release or further possible detention.
What about aliens who are under extradition orders? Maybe they're being extradited to face charges in an alien. Take an alien in this country who is held, right, and is going to be extradited to Algeria to face charges in Algeria, right? There's no question. There are just countless cases that allow that alien to bring a petition for a writ of habeas corpus to challenge the extradition, aren't there?
Well, and the review in those cases is limited to determining whether that individual is extraditable, but the actual extradition decision, including by the Secretary of State, is generally not reviewable under the rule of non-inquiry. So claims brought by someone in an extradition proceeding that he might face possible torture if extradited, again, would not be reviewable. That would not be part of the extraditability part of the analysis that is reviewed by the court.
And what about the two treaties that Mr. Reams mentioned in oral argument, but not in his brief?
We would submit that those arguments are waived because not raised in his briefs. But as far as the CAT treaty does not explicitly apply to Guantanamo in the first place. It only applies to individuals when the United States is removing them from a U.S. territory. But also, the implementing legislation for the CAT limits those claims to being brought in a final order of removal.
What is the CAT? What's CAT?
Convention. The Convention Against Torture.
Oh. Okay. Well, didn't he mention one other? I thought he mentioned another treaty.
Asylum laws.
Right.
In the asylum and immigration laws would only give one an alien a right to bring a torture claim within the context of a final order of removal,
which isn't an issue here. The Department of Homeland Security has given this gentleman permission to remain in the United States.
They have not, Your Honor.
That's what that telegram says, isn't it?
The letter attached to our brief indicates that the petitioner here had submitted an asylum application, and I think maybe his attorney's address was on it, so they were under the impression that he was actually in the United States, but they have since returned his asylum application to him, telling him it cannot be processed because he's not within the United States, not eligible for asylum.
Okay.
Would that change if the Supreme Court decided that persons at Guantanamo had constitutional right to habeas?
Would this outcome change in this case?
Well, first of all, would that asylum ruling change?
No, because you have to be in the United States to be able to apply for asylum under the immigration laws.
I gather that one of the arguments before the court is that Guantanamo is within the sovereign United States.
But there's a specific provision in the Immigration Nationality Act defining the United States, I believe.
The petitioners, the argument about Ham Lily, is that how you pronounce it? The argument about Ham Lily is intriguing. That was on an emergency motion to enjoin a transfer.
It was a motion for 30 days notice prior to transfer.
Okay. And the court, in denying the relief, said it lacked jurisdiction and cited 7A2.
That's correct.
But 7A2 is not necessarily the bar to all of the arguments that are being made here today.
I think it cited Section 7A. I'm not.
No, it just cited Section 7.
7, okay.
It
didn't have the subsection.
I thought it had done 7A2 only. Okay. So this is also true in Rahman?
Is that also true in what?
Rahman. No, in Rahman, what did we cite?
This court in Rahman?
Yeah. That was also a transfer case, right?
Yes, I believe so, but I guess I'm not aware.
I thought Rahman was another case in which we said no jurisdiction, but I don't know what we cited.
I believe also, I'd have to check,
That's
Your Honor, but I think it's
Section 7.
If there are no further questions, we would ask this court to affirm the district court's denial of the preliminary injunction for lack of jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
Ham Lily was a case requesting an injunction against transfer under the Detainee Treatment Act. The court determined that there was no jurisdiction, no authority for transfer under the Detainee Treatment Act. It's completely an opposite here, where we're asking for an injunction against transfer to maintain the prospective habeas jurisdiction of this court and to preserve the status quo. It is not a case brought under habeas. Second, Your Honor,
I'm confused.
Which is not.
our case is not a case in which we are requesting an injunction against transfer on the authority of the Detainee Treatment Act of 2005, which is a different statute. It prescribes the circumstances in which this court may review final decisions of the combatant status tribunals and final decisions of the military commissions.
Yeah, but Hamily didn't cite the Detainee Treatment Act. It cited the Military Commission Act, Section 7.
Fair enough, Your Honor. But that section is the section that essentially refined and elaborated on the Detainee Treatment Act.
So it there's is, no court, no judge, no justice shall have, I mean, covers the waterfront, shall have jurisdiction to do the following things.
But, Your Honor, the precise issue being considered by the Supreme Court of the United States is whether that bar against habeas jurisdiction is constitutional.
I understand that, but I'm trying to figure how you get around the fact that there's precedent in this court after the grant of certiorari in Boumediene saying, denying relief of the sort that you're requesting on the basis that we don't have jurisdiction. That's precedential. You've got to distinguish that case, and I'm yet to hear how you're going to do it.
I distinguished that case on the ground that the court wasn't being asked to preserve the status quo under its all writs jurisdiction. It wasn't being asked to preserve the status quo because of a prospective restoration of habeas. And I don't think that it's therefore law of the case. I think that it's distinguishable. And, Your Honor, if you don't mind, because—
Well, it's not law of the case. It's law of the circuit.
Law of the circuit.
Yeah.
And, Your Honor, if I may, because my time is limited, I would like to, with regret, call the Court's attention to the description of the standard for preliminary relief in the WMATC case, 559 F. 2nd 841. At 844, I believe that under that decision, we only need raise questions going to the merits, serious and substantial and difficult and doubtful, and we certainly think the Supreme Court's grant of cert in that case signifies at least that much. Finally, Your Honor.
The questions you raise go to jurisdiction, though, and that's why I was asking, what do you do about the merits? Suppose you have jurisdiction. Where's your argument that you've raised serious questions about the merits.
Assuming that the jurisdictional decision were decided in our favor,
right,
we would proceed to argue that habeas should be exercised, that the habeas power of the court gives it authority to enjoin
the
transfer.
Well, that's fine. You make it now an oral argument. But, you know, take a case where the jurisdictional question is a little fuzzy, right? But on the merits, not your case, but on the merits, it's clear as a bell that even if we had jurisdiction, there's no way we're going to give this particular petitioner any relief because on the merits, his arguments are just nonsense, right? Now, in that type of a situation, well, even though the jurisdictional question were before the Supreme Court, we wouldn't issue an injunction pending the Supreme Court's decision because it wouldn't matter. He's going to lose anyway. He's going to lose on the merits.
Well, Your Honor, we believe that that is a question that although it's a question of law, it's a question that should be decided in the first instance by the district court based on the briefing that's been presented by the district court in which the international law issues have been vetted and in which the examples in which habeas courts have enjoined transfer have been vetted. And, of course, you have the federal rules of appellate procedure.
I don't think that works because you're not asking the district court to issue an injunction. You're asking us to issue an injunction.
Well, Your Honor, this is an appeal from the district.
And we don't have any argument on the merits that you've mounted in this court. None. Zero.
Your Honor, the primary question here is one of jurisdiction, not of merits, number one, sir. And number two, the federal rules of appellate procedure and the Supreme Court rules preclude the transfer of custody of an imprisoned person without the permission of the court. And finally, I think that it would be a cruel irony if the court determined that it had no jurisdiction here, the Supreme Court were to review that determination, and we were never to have an opportunity to address the merits, including the merits of relief in the district court. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
I want to ask the government counsel something. Is there any is there any current plan to transfer this individual? I mean, all the emergency relief has been denied, and he's still in Guantanamo.
Efforts, as we explained in our brief, we can't comment on when or whether he will be transferred. He has been cleared for transfer, so the efforts are ongoing, and sometimes that takes a while in discussions with foreign governments.
When you say transfer, do you mean release?
Release from U.S. custody, and we refer to it as transfer because he gets transferred to a foreign government.
But release from U.S. custody?
Release from U.S. custody.
And is the identity of that foreign government known yet?
Not that we can comment on, Your Honor. I don't know if it is or not.
No, it could be Albania, not Algeria. Could be.
It could be, yes.
Yeah. All right.
Until the process is concluded.
He had some relationship to the United Kingdom, did he not?
Yes, I believe he lived there for some time.
Algeria or the UK more likely, right?
Again, why that process is ongoing, we can't comment on.
I understand that Albania is a possibility. So is Upper Slavovia, but he does have ties to the United Kingdom.
And again, when the State Department has these discussions with foreign government, they take the case by case.
We had a case here a year or so ago where Chinese nationals were transferred to Albania.
Right.
That's why I used Albania.
Right? That's correct, Your Honor.
And I just want to make certain, is the discussion, to the extent you can comment on it, an outright release to somewhere else or a transfer of custody to another nation?
He is released from U.S. custody to a foreign government. That foreign government then has the decision whether to release the individual or for possible detention investigation if there's criminal charges under its own laws.
I think under our decision in Omar, it doesn't much matter, does it?
What doesn't much?
Whether he's released so that he can be picked up or turned over.
I believe it does matter, Your Honor, and I'd point the court to the decision in Kasim as being more on point than Omar, where the court held that habeas cases were not mooted by the fact that the petitioners there were transferred to Albania. The court said that transfer was released from U.S. custody, essentially.
I don't remember Albania being a part of Omar. This was an American citizen in Iraq.
Yes, where the MCA did not apply,
and the government argued, I believe, that it was, and the court, I believe, rejected the idea that there was any meaningful distinction between releasing him in Iraq or turning him over to the Iraqi authorities.
Well, the court in that case did issue an injunction barring transfer, but we think that injunction was best understood as being part issued under the All Writs Act there, because the court did hold that it had habeas jurisdiction. And in this case, again, the MCA applies here. It didn't in Omar. And part of the core habeas relief is not a transfer issue. And so Section 7 here of the MCA, barring jurisdiction over both habeas cases and transfer, would preclude any exercise of even the All Writs Act.
If the Supreme Court reverses in Boumediene and tells us that there's a right of access to habeas from Guantanamo, would this case be any different than Omar?
Yes, I believe it will, Your Honor, because the MCA, Boumediene doesn't involve any challenge to that second provision of Part 7A of the MCA, which removes jurisdiction over actions regarding transfer. So that provision would independently, even if Boumediene were reversed.
Oh, I thought that provision was also at issue in Boumediene.
No, it is not, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ms. Hancock. Counsel,
Your Honor,
please confine yourself to Ms. Hancock's most recent appearance, please.
Yes, sir.
We filed a petition for certiorari before judgment in the Supreme Court, which was denied. The government said that the court should deny the petition because once this court decides Boumediene, the Court of Appeals will be able to apply this court's rulings in deciding petitioner's case without the need for action by this court. In other words, the United States recognized that the disposition of Boumediene could and might be relevant to this court, to its disposition of our certiorari petition. Therefore, I would say the same logic would apply to this court.
Thank you. Thank you both. Cases.